Hello and welcome to the BGCP Disassemble podcast, the official podcast for the Big Glasgow Comic Page, where we talk about the latest comics, movies, television, and other pieces of nerd culture. I'm your host for this episode, Massimo Castelli, and as always, or sometimes, or whenever he's not renovating his house, I am joined by the lovely Daniel Boyd.
Do you know what I miss, Mass?
What's that?
See, like, in the old days, like, the first few interviews and podcast episodes, your voice used to go high at the end of the intro. You used to always say, and other pieces of nerd culture! And you've kind of corrected that, and I'm kind of like, oh, I missed the high pitch, but I missed a bit with his voice breaks.
you missed the voice break. I mean, it probably happened several times throughout the episode, so don't worry, it's not that far away. Yeah, so on today's episode, we are talking about the greatest disappointments that we have experienced when watching movies or playing games or television or any kind of piece of kind of media. As always, we'll be talking about the latest news and also probably be reflecting on some of the reviews that have been put on the website this week, because I think, Dan, you've got a few articles that have came out, I assume?
Yeah, I've got the odd one. Do I mention them up top, or will we talk about them later?
I think we'll talk about it later as we kind of get towards the news segment. But first of all, you know, let's focus on the most crushing disappointments that we've had in the past few years. I mean, I'm not talking about general life stuff, I'm just talking about...
Yeah, I was going to say, at a time like this, at a time just post-COVID, the world's just been through, like, basically we've all just lost a year of our lives. Let's go through the most crushing disappointments in the media just to depress you more. The one form of escapism we've got, let's just look at the shitty ones.
Exactly, let's just shit all over it. Let's look at all the worst ones.
Do you want to start? I don't know how many you want to go through here.
I'm fine for you kicking it off, man, because if you've got something you really are passionately, you know, passionately think was terrible.
I mean, I've got a good few in the back of my head, but one that I think is kind of topical because recently we went over the Star Wars movies. I think we talked about it. Well, I wasn't on the episode. I was on the prequels episode. We spoke about it on that episode, how hyped the world was for The Phantom Menace. Before that film came out, we were so naive and so uncorrupted, do you know what I mean? We were so young and we're like, oh yeah, Star Wars, that's going to be ace, like, it doesn't matter, it's George Lucas, and look how cool Darth Maul looks, and that's going to be great.
I think as well, like, at that point, the world was so Star Wars deprived.
Yes.
Because there hadn't been a new film in, what, like, 20, 25 years?
But even then, I mean, there was a significant gap. This is too early in the morning for me to actually do the maths. But I'm pretty sure there was about the same gap between Return of the Jedi and Phantom Menace, I suppose, between Revenge and Force Awakens. Am I wrong? Maybe not quite as long.
Revenge was 2003. It was 10 years. It was 10 years, no.
No, 2015. Sorry, so 12. I mean, it's still over a decade without Star Wars. But I think the reason that Force Awakens wasn't quite at that same, like, the whole, like, Phantom Menace, when that came out, it was on the news and shit. Like, it was mainstream front page news when that movie came out. I think the reason that Force Awakens didn't get there is because of the prequels. We'd been tainted by the prequels. Whereas at this point in 1999, 2000s. It was 98 when Phantom Menace came out. Oh. So yeah, round about then anyway, no, like, we didn't know that there was going to be fucking centimetres and bad sand references, and like, we didn't know any of that yet. So the world was just so hyped for it. I will still go to bat and say that Phantom Menace is the best prequel.
I completely wholeheartedly disagree with you with that one.
If I had to watch, put a gun in my head and say, tell me watch the Star Wars prequel, I'd put on The Phantom Menace. But it was still a crushing disappointment.
I mean,
it's still nowhere near.
I think I'd want to blow my brains out if I had to watch Phantom Menace on
that. It's still nowhere near the quality of... just shoot me. It's still nowhere near the quality of... also the original trilogy. Star Wars will probably never be of that quality again outside the Mandalorian. So
yeah. Chris Favreau's in control of it.
That is. If we're talking about crushing disappointments and hard truths, and there's one for you.
Star Wars is pretty pish. if you do the math or the ratio, whatever, you know.
And that's the thing, like, everybody's like, Star Wars is shite now because of Disney. Disney ruined it. Kathleen Kennedy, blah, blah, blah. No, what about the prequels? Exactly. Star Wars has been crap since the millennium, like, since 2000.
There's three good films. There's three bad films. There's one alright film, and there's two terrible films.
Yeah.
And one, I guess, Rogue One.
I like Rogue One.
I like Rogue One as well.
And Solo's harmless.
And Solo's okay.
Yeah, it's just harmless. Right. Yeah.
So you know, you put the Batten average.
Still not a great ratio, no.
You know what I mean?
Not a good KD ratio.
Exactly. You put the Batten average there. That's not great, is it?
Topical mug.
There you go.
Listen, Phantom Menace. It was. There's parts of that film that I love. It's kind of like Man of Steel for me. There's parts of that film that I love, and there's parts that I actually hate and why it made me rip my eyes out. So
I'll be honest, like, I don't have a dispassionate hate towards all of them. I just dislike Phantom Menace the most because I feel like it's the one that's aged the worst out of all of them.
Attack of the Clones is aged worst.
Man. I know.
The bad CGI and the mad Colosseum bit.
Yeah, but I'll take that over Jar Jar Binks any day of the week, mate. I'll be honest. And the mad Dungans and all that, close, like, man. It was just, you know what I mean?
Mate, they should have did the draft for Jar Jar to be a Sith Lord. Yeah. Just to follow through, man.
Mate, see if they'd done it, I think we would have had so much more respect for the Obi-Wan.
Do you know what I want to know about the prequels and about Phantom Menace? How do you take one of the most badass, coolest actors in Hollywood and Samuel L. Jackson and make him boring? Like, that is genuinely amazing. How do you take a guy with that much charisma and make him boring?
The guy is like a maestro with dialogue in every film he's in, and this one he's just fucking...
Even in bad movies like Snakes in a Plane, he's still got that Sam Jackson charisma. Where is that in Star Wars? It's just gone.
And you can tell that he can do fucking dialogue correct, can't he?
Mm-hmm.
All the Tarantino films.
But he's great in Kingsman as well.
Anyway... We digress on the Star Wars stuff.
Not like us to go off track.
Exactly, never. but speaking of another George Lucas property, in my opinion, this would be something that's closer to my ballpark because I was alive when this one came out, unlike Phantom Menace, because I want to make you feel old, Dan.
I don't care. We're all going to die.
We're going to die eventually.
another hard twist and disappointing news.
Exactly. We're all going to die.
Let's just get that one out of the way.
You heard it here first, maybe. Ever impending mortality? I don't know. For me personally, another Lucas kind of based property because I loved these films growing up. And my uncle loved these films, he got me into them as well, is Indiana Jones, but specifically Indiana Jones and the Temple of Crystal Skull. What a terrible, terrible film.
See, this one is kind of a weird one for me because I've never... I'm going to sound fucking typical Dan, being controversial for sake of it, but genuinely, I've never been... I don't dislike Indiana Jones. Same way I don't dislike Jurassic Park. I've just never really been a fan. Never really been my thing. I prefer Star Wars. I prefer your superhero stuff, but like Jurassic Park and Indiana Jones and a lot of those kind of like early blockbusters. I appreciate them for what they are. Like, there's certain sequences in both of those franchises... And in Jaws, and in all the kind of early blockbuster films that paved the way for everything we've known since. So I kind of take that away from them. But yeah, Indiana Jones is fine. I've always preferred Star Wars.
That's entirely fair. I don't know. I enjoy Indiana Jones. I do like Star Wars. I love Star Wars a bit.
And I also prefer Uncharted.
But that's my opinion, is that I love Uncharted, so I also love Indiana Jones and Arthur hand in hand.
Let's just see what happens in this Uncharted movie first before we jump into it.
See when Tom Holland was like, I could have put more effort into my acting performance. I was like, oh mate, don't.
Honestly, it's not even Tom Holland. I like Tom Holland.
Mark Wahlberg in it.
In my mind, he's not Nathan Drake, but I do like the guy. But Mark Wahlberg is Sully. He doesn't even have a mustache. What is the point? Why are you having Sully without a mustache?
Even young Sully has a mustache.
I know.
We've seen it. We've seen young Sully has a mustache.
And not only that, Tom Hanks looks exactly like Sully now. See with his white hair and his mustache.
Or when Nathan Fillion released that weird, like...
Yeah, yeah. And they had the guy from Don't Breathe, what's his name, Stephen Lang. He was, I mean, he's a bit of a rough Sully, but I'd still prefer that. Mark Wahlberg,
Anyway, sorry, right.
Digressing.
Indiana Jones, Temple of Crystal Skull, terrible film. all things considered. And when you compare that, the weight, again, another thing where the weight of it was so long, you know, came out, what, 2008, 2007?
Yeah.
Last Crusade came out in what, fucking early 90s, like late 80s, early 90s. Last Crusade, by the way, fantastic film. It's probably the best one of all of them, in my opinion, so fight me.
Again, I'm going to sound like I'm just being controversial for Zeke. I'm not. Like, my favourite is Temple of Doom.
What?
That's no one's favourite.
No one likes Temple of Doom.
I like Return of the Jedi and I like Temple of Doom. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Who are you? Terrible name.
And Phantom Menace is the best prequel.
What universe are you from? You've been watching different films. Anyway, regardless of that, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Skull is a terrible film for many reasons, including a nuclear fridge. And also, just Indiana Jones, just not being Indiana Jones. That they were trying so hard in that film to pass the buck.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying so hard in that film to sequel where it to give Shia LaBeouf like his chance to be, you know, Indiana Jones' son and all that stuff. Which it can't work when you have a really charming character. Just Shia LaBeouf wasn't a really charming character as much. Just a bit annoying.
And not only that, right? Like on paper, you say to somebody Indiana Jones and aliens. And you're like, hell yeah, let's get on board. And they messed up, they really couldn't do that right. Like,
but it's Indiana Jones aliens fighting 1950s Nazis.
Yeah.
Escape Nazis, pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. And then
nuclear bomb.
And then you've got CGI Shia LaBeouf swinging like a monkey through the trees. And just really bad dialogue.
Just really terrible Shia LaBeouf performance. By the way, a guy we know can act from stuff like fucking Peanut Butter Falcon and like Fury and like... He is a good actor.
Yeah.
But...
Weird dude, but good actor.
Yeah, weird dude, good actor. I mean, you know, the most tortured artists are sometimes. But yeah, no, just one of those things, it fell flat on its face.
Yeah.
Like, it promised so much and could deliver, and I hope that, you know, the new one, whatever it's called, Indiana Jones 5, the one that's going to be about set in the 1969, as we know.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the moon landings. Actually, speaking of, may as well, let's see if I've got it here. I don't have it. I collected some stuff from the set of Indiana Jones.
Right.
So I went down in Glasgow and I basically tore one of the posters off the wall. Can't find it.
Is this a new one or filming?
Aye.
Right. See, are you hyped for that?
I am excited for it, but good. I know for a fact that I can be stung again, you know what I mean?
Yeah. See, like, I just couldn't give a shit. I don't care.
That's fair. Honestly, 100% reasonable.
I'll probably still see it.
I'm excited for it because I have the nostalgia for it, but I feel for a fact that a lot of people who maybe haven't seen the first Indiana Jones films, because hopefully they'll just retcon Crystal Skull out of existence. But yeah, no, I'm excited for it. But at the same time, you know, good to temper your hopes. But yeah, that's why I kind of think one of the most disappointing ones for me recently, especially rewatching it, because I enjoyed it as a child, but you go back on it and you realise this doesn't hold up at all to the other three.
What I think's interesting when you think back to a lot of these movies, and this isn't always the case, but often it's the third movie that you're like, whoa. like, the Matrix Revolutions, I'll argue that Matrix Reloaded, again, has its moments I like, has its terrible moments as well, but it also has some moments that I enjoy. Same as Phantom Menace. So at least Reloaded's got that, whereas Revelations was just a horrible film. And then you've also got things like The Godfather Part 3, and I would also argue The Dark Knight Rises. With both of those movies, right,
mm-hmm.
that wouldn't make any sense plot-wise, right, like, obviously. But see if you ordered them differently, see if The Dark Knight Rises, forget about the plot, right, because again, it wouldn't make any sense.
No, but
pretend The Dark Knight Rises came out before The Dark Knight, no one would hate Rises as much as they do. Same with Godfather 3, if Part 3 came out before Part 2, I know it wouldn't make any sense in terms of story.
I mean, arguably Part 3 would actually, because Part 2 is a lot of flashbacks.
Godfather you're talking about?
Part 2 is a lot of flashbacks.
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, like I think both Rises and Godfather 3, they're not great movies, but they're not as bad as they get the rap for. It's just because they followed two of the great sequels ever, Dark Knight and Godfather 2.
I think the only trilogy, in my opinion, that ever stuck landing was Back to the Future.
Yeah, I mean, well, again, listen, people don't like Part 3. I think Part 3 is my favourite. I think Part 3 is my favourite.
I realise, when you watch Part 3 more, you realise how good of a trilogy cap it is.
I love Part 3.
It's great.
Maybe I'm just a sucker for happy endings. I like Star of Jedi and I like Part 3. So.
I mean, technically, if you count the sequel was the Back to the Future of the game. I like that game. I like that Telltale.
That's
game.
What people that say the Ghostbusters game is the real Ghostbusters.
I mean, it is also technically canon.
Right, so talking about bad third movies, though, right? Like I said, Dark Knight Godfather can make a case for, but Spider-Man 3, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 3.
Okay, so
followed two of the greatest films.
Yeah,
I still think the first Spider-Man's dated. Spider-Man 2 is like one of my favourite films ever. I'm quite bad for that.
He looks just like he's the same age as my son.
He looks just like my boy.
Oh, my boy.
He's only a kid. He looks like a boy. yeah, I mean, what an absolute classic. Like, I love that. I love every single part of that film.
That's just so good.
I feel like it's such a good blend of one, like the superhero thing that we still go to cinema for, like the kind of thriller superhero film.
Yeah.
It's also a good blend of Sam Raimi's weird kind of borderline cheesy filmmaking from like Evil Dead and Darkman. Like, it's got elements of that in it. And then it's also got like nostalgia for the comics. Like, it's a perfect blend of the three.
So you know how you said you didn't like Starro last week, Dan?
Yes.
What's that? No, we'll come back to that later if we talk about Suicide Squad. When you're talking about stuff like nostalgia and cheesiness related to comic book films. But I couldn't agree more with you in terms of Spider-Man, at least.
Spider-Man 3, I mean, again, like, how do you mess up Venom? Well, I suppose they messed up Venom twice, but we're not going into that. Review for Tom Hardy's Venom on the website, but we're not going into that now. How do you mess up Venom? How do you mess up... They built up Harry Osborn's Goblin character for three movies, and then they still passed it up the wall. They never did anything with Doc Connors. The Lizard wasn't even a thing. I think he was rumored to be in part four.
He was in part four, but the Spider-Man 3 game had the Lizard in it as well.
Yeah, like, yeah, I know. I love that the game just always added Shocker. Like, Shocker's in every Spider-Man game. It's really weird. And then obviously, like, the Venom, the Goblin, the Sandman stuff is the best part of Spider-Man 3, without a doubt.
It's actually an alright retcon as well. Like, I don't mind it as much as people...
It's not the way they did it. It just, again, like I always say, I hate when a universe feels small. I've been to New York. It's a very busy place with thousands of people. What are the chances that it was the same dude?
It's comic books.
That's the same as Star Wars, how everybody's Luke Skywalker's da. Like, you know, everybody has to be his da. Like, you can just have a random story in that universe. It's same with like this Harry Potter as well, like how he's the chosen one. Like, how can you just be a wee guy that go wide by once? Like, stop making it all destiny and like you're the chosen one, and like, and much like Terminator also, that's the same. Like, I don't know, I prefer just a cool universe. Rather than guy just going about his day, and something mental happens.
I mean, Cornetto trilogy, arguably, right?
I don't know.
Spider-Man 3 is a weird one, right? Because it was supposed to be something so much better than it was, and it wasn't supposed to include Venom. And we know this for a fact. Sam Raimi's went on record multiple times saying he didn't
want to include
Venom. Studio shoehorned it in. Put Topher Grace as Venom.
Yeah.
Good, but, all right, actor, right?
I like Topher Grace, but that pretty much ruined his career. Like,
not Venom, you know what I mean?
It honestly wasn't until Black Klansman before I was this guy's great. But But like, for years, that film would pretty much kind of put a big hurdle on his career, I think. Yeah.
I just, look, superhero movies are a weird one, right? Because some of the parts is always, comic book origin story has some villains in it. Cheesy plot, big explosions, yada yada yada. You think, how'd you do that wrong? You look at Spider-Man 3. End of story, right? You say that, and then you look at Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Well, I was going to say, what's amazing? Like, you know, there's that old saying, like, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Like, how do you cram that many villains in a movie the first time? Fair enough, they go excited, right? They were like, let's do Sandman, because that's what Raven wanted to do. Let's do Venom, because that's what the studio wanted to do. Let's do Harry Osborn, because we've been building up for three movies.
Exactly.
I mean, honestly, at this point, they might as well have done Doc Connors' Lizard and, what's his name, Bruce Campbell as Mysterio.
Or like, even the Vulture as well.
They might as well have just done a Sinister Six thing, because we're kind of at the point where we've done it twice, right? We've done it with Spider-Man 3, then we did it again with all the villains and Amazing Spider-Man 2. And that is the one thing, like, as much as I trust, what's his name, is it John Watts, that's doing Spider-Man 3, and he's done a good job with the first two, with Tom Holland.
Yeah.
Done a good job with the first two, and he's obviously Marvel at this point, you think it's a fairly safe bet. But just all this stuff I'm reading about, all the multiverse stuff, all the villains coming back, blah, 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 I'm like, oh, please don't mess it up. I mean, just don't do another Amazing Spider-Man 2, if anything. Like, I don't know, I'm worried.
Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it? Like, I don't know, it is like, it does fill me with worry, but, you know, so far Marvel have a pretty solid track record.
Yeah, they do, they have.
You overall, just kind of one of those things that you keep. You really wish that more studios would take after that. Speaking of studios that should be taking after Marvel's track record, Suicide Squad.
David Ayer's Suicide Squad from 2016.
David Ayer's Suicide Squad. Not the Suicide Squad, just Suicide Squad.
Right.
Right. So, this film originally portrayed as this gritty, sombre villain team-up thing. It was action-packed, stuff like that. By the time you get to the third trailer, it has Bohemian Rhapsody playing over the top. It's got sickly neon writing and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Getting audience hyped for basically a film that doesn't exist, as it turns out.
Yeah. Suicide Squad's main problem was its timing.
Yeah.
It came out at that time where DC were trying to get their universe off the ground.
They were trying to
tie everything in, which is what the only reason that Batman appears in that film.
Flash as well.
Yeah. As you're saying with the tone, like, Zack Snyder was also wanting to go with a darker tone, but then after Batman v Superman critically underperformed, they saw how well James Gunn was doing with Guardians and how the quirky colours and all that, so they were like, right, let's try and shoehorn some of that into this marketing. And it just resulted in a mess. I say this every week, and I feel like a broken record, right? But when was the first? Man of Steel was 2013, right? From 2013, they signed up all these amazing directors, right? David Ayer, I'm not taking away from him because I like some of his stuff. Zack Snyder and all your DC directors, right? And just sat them all down, and James Gunn as well for the Suicide Squad film that eventually came out, and just being like, right, here's all your characters, here's the Justice League, Batman, Suicide Squad, all these franchises, right, all these money makers, pick one and make a film. Like, see, if they just said that for day one, we'd have been getting movies like Joker and James Gunn's Suicide Squad. At least it was unique, at least our personality. Like, we would have been getting films with personality for day one. Zack Snyder would have been free to do his Dark Trilogy himself with no interference. Like, it would have resulted in better movies.
I think this is the biggest thing.
They didn't even need to bother connecting them.
This is the biggest thing as well, is that when it comes to Marvel, I don't think Marvel at the time set out to make a big, grand cinematic universe.
No, that's it.
It wasn't this whole grand magnum opus thing from the mind of Kevin Feige and Jon Favreau, where there'd be a 22-film movie plan culminating in the biggest box office success of a film of all time.
Yeah.
Don't think that was the point. The issue was is that DC, I think, were trying to do that. They were trying to sow the seeds of a wider universe, and it just...
Yeah. I was watching a video the other day. I'd love to reference it so I could give you guys credit, but I can't remember what the channel was called. But it was a video on YouTube, and they were talking about... if you just, like, YouTube the Marvel formula, or, like, the Marvel comedic formula, and it was basically saying how... See the formula of Marvel movies, like, the humour they've got, and the kind of fun feeling they've got, and, I mean, we all know it at this point.
Yeah. It's Marvel.
It came about by accident. Like, see, when they were making that first Iron Man film, they hardly even had a script. There's an interview with Jeff Bridges, also playing Obadiah Stane, and he was like, it was the first film, it was the first project he worked on in years that didn't have, like, a pure, dedicated, penned-in, solid script. It was more just going into the room, there's some dialogue to get through, but just bounce off each other, see what happens. Which is why C-Line's, like, when he takes this pizza and he's like, have two slices, and he takes two slices. Like, all that kind of, like, banter that him and Tony have, which builds their relationship, is just Jeff Bridges and Robert Downey Jr. bouncing off each other. Like, so that, and then when also they watch back the screen tests and the dailies and stuff, and they were like, oh, that's good. Jon Favreau was like, that's good shit. That became the formula. Do you know what I mean? So that, as you're saying, that happened by accident. None of that was planned. And then nobody expected Iron Man to do as well as it did, which is why nobody offered Robert Downey Jr. more than a one-movie deal, which is why Robert Downey Jr. so much money. Like, yeah. So nobody said it coming.
I know people probably listen to this thinking about we should be shitting on films here. No, this is mainly us trying to talk about all the good bits of films as well, but also all the, and then contrast them with the terrible, terrible films that exist.
Yeah.
Just in case you were getting mad at us not talking shit on other films.
I know, it has been a while since we talked about something shitty, but yeah, Right, let's go back to Suicide Squad, because that was one you brought up.
Yeah.
By the way, allegedly as well, we're supposed to have the mother boxes involved and also Darkseid and stuff like that on the Enchantress storyline.
Yeah, the things at the fight, the Mad Goo monsters,
yeah,
they were meant to be parademons, and they actually CGI'd the parademons out because it got changed.
Yeah.
Listen, I'll still argue at this point. I don't think it's a horrible movie. Suicide Squad, it's not great. It's not a good movie, but it's not the worst thing I've ever seen. It's not Spider-Man 3. It's not Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 3.
It has a lot more redeeming qualities going for it than most of the films that we've talked about so far.
I enjoyed Jai Courtney's boomerang in it. I enjoyed, to some extent, Will Smith's Deadshot. Like,
I mean, Harley Quinn's... Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn.
Harley Quinn, I know, sure. Yeah. I like Harley Quinn, and I do like Margot Robbie. I just don't like Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn. I like her, and I like the character. I
think that version of the character is a bit hit or miss, because it's not bad, but it's not great either. Like, we'll probably get to it, but I much prefer the version that's in Suicide Squad. James Gunn's Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Obviously, over this one. But,
yeah, I mean that's the thing. Like, as much as I kind of shit on Suicide Squad last week, it's better than this. It's better than the Ear's Cut. But I would have also really liked. I know everybody's saying no, release the Ear Cut, and I'm not going to come at you one of you guys. But I would have liked to have seen from the start. Like I'm saying years ago, if they got David Ayer and James Gunn and both gave them a Suicide Squad movie and not messed with them, just let them make their film movie. I'd love to watch the two of them without any studio interference and just. But the difference, just look at this.
Well, see, so the thing is
going, I think it was fascinating.
Is it Suicide Squad as well? That film, the final film that we saw in cinema, was cut up by a trailer house.
Yeah.
A trailer house that had no experience editing films before that hand, but was solely given the film to edit due to the fact there was apparently a terrible studio audience to Ayer's Cut, and also as well, the fact that there was such a good reaction to the trailer that they produced. And that is insane to me that that's how much little faith Warner Brothers had in that project.
Yeah.
Right? We're going to hand it off to a random trailer house and attempt to make it more Guardians-like.
Yeah.
Which, as a filmmaker, must be heartbreaking.
It's a mess, and it's... I don't know, it's not... Like, it's surprising that, as you're saying, like, why would a big studio like DC hand it off to a company that hasn't ever edited the movie before? Like, that's kind of a shocking decision. But, I don't know, man, it's just, like, the way movies are made now, it's kind of not surprising, especially, I don't want to sound like a pure indie kid, but, like, these big studio movies, that's what happens as a manufacturing machine, like...
Obviously, but I feel like, even then, though, it's a director's vision, they should have at least a little bit of creative liberty.
I agree. In an ideal world, every director should get to see their vision through, but...
I just, with this Suicide Squad, Suicide Squad, it's just called Suicide Squad? Is that a difference? Is that the
Suicide Squad.
So, the original one was just Suicide Squad, right?
Yeah.
So, Suicide Squad is a terrible film. Because it's so tonally inconsistent.
Yeah.
And feels basically unfinished.
Yeah.
And if it was finished, as you said, I'm not a big Ear Cut guy, and I wasn't a Snyder Cut person either. I was kind of interested to see what happened with it. Look, if it happens, it happens, and arguably Warner Brothers could definitely make a buck from it. And argue that it's part of this wider DC multiverse that they've got going on, that they keep kind of talking about and explaining and stuff through different films. I think Suicide Squad is probably the one that kind of definitely broke my heart the most, because it had so much potential.
Yeah.
But it failed massively.
Right, let's move on to a game.
Yes.
I mean, there's a few choices in between. Here, I'm just have one last thing, but I think Aliens Colonial Marines is a disaster that can't be ignored.
A disaster that can't be ignored and could have been corrected with one letter replaced.
Thing is, though, right, even if that code, the thing that I was referring to, if you don't know, there was one line of code that was wrong that basically broke the AI for all the enemies in the game.
It was the word tether, was spelt teether.
Yeah. But the thing is, even if that line of code had been corrected, this still wouldn't have been the game that was shown beforehand.
100%.
This, and in this era, like 2013, it was kind of, wasn't the first time, because the very first time was Killzone 2 at the PSG reveal, I remember it. But 2013 was kind of the first time that it became, that was the kind of era where it was becoming really popular to show a game that you're never going to deliver on. Like Watch Dogs was the same era. And yeah, there was a slew of games that, because it was a turn of the generation, it was a PS4, Xbox One generation just kicking off, and there was so many empty promises made, and it still happens. Look at Ubisoft, like, they do it every year with their games.
It was definitely the era of the CGI trailer.
Yeah. I mean, I just, what a disappointment. Like, that game could have been so cool, and they did kind of, Gearbox didn't retain themselves, but the developers, I can't remember the stuff, but the developers of Alien Isolation kind of redeemed that franchise for a lot of people. Alien Isolation is a pretty great game.
It's one of the, arguably one of the best horror game, original horror IP,
The only issue I've got with it, I feel like it's a bit too long. Like, that's like a 16-hour game, and see it be like crawling through tunnels, getting chased by a blip on a radar for 16 hours. It felt, by the end, I did finish it, but by the end I was getting a bit, it's just going on a bit long. Do you know what I mean? That was my one issue with that game, but for the first 10 hours, I loved that game. Like, every moment.
It probably feels like a 20, 30 hour game that was
blown. Yeah, it just drags a bit at the end, but it's compared to your last Colonial Marines Christ, it's a masterpiece.
Exactly.
Yeah, the other one I just want to touch on briefly is Fallout 76, because, wow. There's a review on the website for Fallout 76 that goes into my thoughts a lot deeper, but just the amazement that the thought they could get away with this is amazing. Like, everybody likes to talk about the bravado that Sony had when they announced the PS3 and they told people to get a second job, or the bravado that Xbox had when they came out with the Xbox One and ranted on about TV for 2 hours instead of talking about games. Like, people like to talk about that, but let's not forget how much bravado and I don't know, like, bullshit Bethesda were full of that year when they came out and said, here's a pretty much games as a service game that we're going to charge full price for, that's not going to have a story. Like, the thing about the Fallout games, again, this is an opinion, and again, review for Fallout 4 on the website if you want to hear my opinion on a decent Fallout game. The thing about the Fallout games, right, especially 3 and 76, which are, in my opinion, the best two Fallout games, you suffer through the three Vegas, New Vegas. Three New Vegas. You suffer through the kind of janky gunplay and the kind of stinted computer screens and hacking. Like, some of the functions in those games are a bit dated in the Bethesda games because of the engine. But you suffer through them because there's a charm to the story and the characters and the voice acting and dialogue options and things like that. Whereas,
to remove all of that,
if you strip all that away, what have you got left? You've got
a shell of a world
You've got the bad part of Fallout.
Yeah.
That's all you've got left.
Gameplay.
And then that doesn't even talk about the technical issues, like the whole, it just works, the famous Todd Howard quote. And then there's a video where he's saying it just works, and then he's like, the guy's walking through the terrain and stuff, and like the game's just totally
not to
broken.
Mention all the stuff about the fucking pre-order stuff.
And then, and then I was saying, we've also got all the microtransaction issues, which again, 2018, what an era for microtransactions between Fallout 76 and Battlefront.
The canvas bag, and it was a shitty...
Thing is, though, I will say for Battlefront 2, when that game came out, yes, it was a horrible game for microtransactions. EA fixed that. Dice fixed that eventually. That's a great game now, Battlefield 2. Fallout 76, still a piece of shit.
Same as Shadow of War as well.
The Mordor game.
That had so much... Warner Brothers game had so many microtransactions to buy captains and all that stuff. And they eventually fixed that as well. Because the Nemesis system and stuff like that, again, all those ones that worked. Because the developer went back and fixed it because of fan outcry.
You
said Bethesda's 76 is...
Like, they've tried. They've put stuff in, but it's still... I played it, I don't know, about 2 months ago, just before I moved, and it's still horrible.
Also, all the stuff as well, with the pre-order stuff with the fucking helmet that was unsafe.
Yeah.
That had fucking literal poisonous stuff in it, and it's like...
I know.
It's just a PR nightmare.
Yeah. I've got one more game in the can, but I don't know if you wanted to defy that number before I go into it, because I think it'll be quite extensive.
I was just going to maybe ring off the ones that I can have, because I feel like you kind of mentioned it already. Watch Dogs was one of those things. I still enjoyed that game.
Yeah,
but
me too.
Wasn't the game that were promised.
Yes.
from the trailers. I think Watch Dogs 2 probably closer to it, and again, another one. I think the Watch Dogs franchise is pretty much, you're able to conclude this, because it promised so much and delivers almost what you want, but not quite.
I've not played Legion, so I can't comment on that.
Legion is a good game. It is definitely something. It can be fun, right, but I don't think it's a full price game. And the whole idea is that the character systems get quite repetitive, because it's a world full of all these people, but all these people might have different jobs and different character concepts, but they still have the same skill sets and abilities.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's not. It's fun. So I played a bit of it. I think I refunded it in the end because I was kind of like, But I played it. I thought it was fun, but I don't know if it's worth the full price of £60. But I feel like with Watch Dogs, you can't really say much other than, like, it was promised so much with CGI trailers and this idea of, oh, it's this big city.
That demo that they showed at, was it A2013, 2012, round about that era, that single slice of the game is, like, oh man, that'd be astonishing to actually get to play that. That's the thing, it's not the... Like, as you said, I quite enjoyed Watch Dogs despite that when it came out. But it's not the fact that the end product wasn't enjoyable, because to some extent it's just that other version that you promised us we would never get. And that's the frustrating part.
Yeah, I said, it's like that. It's the literal thing. It's the promise of it.
Yeah.
So good and so high.
I mean, I can't actually remember any off the top of my head right now what ones I see this in. But in quite a few of the reviews I've written on the website, if you want to go and read my reviews, quite often I'll say, I still feel like I'm waiting on the movie that the trailer showed. Like, or the game. Like, I'm still waiting on the game that they promised. This isn't the game they promised. Like, it's so, like, underwhelming and unfulfilling. Because you walk away going, that wasn't
what I came
for. Like, that wasn't what I was hyped for. And you know you'll never get it because you got that crap thing instead that you just sat through. Like, That's the punch in the gut. It's not that these things are bad or good, or everybody's got their opinions, and some people might like fucking Suicide Squad and Fallout 76. I don't know, but the point is, even if you do like it, the point is it's not what you promised. That's the point.
It's true that the main thing is literally it's promising so much to delivering so little.
Yeah.
In terms of I don't even think promising so much and delivering so little. I think just promising a good game and kind of delivering a reskinned piece of shit was... I am not a big horror game guy. I'm not a big person like that. I shit my pants at the sight of most things. I've got a weak stomach. But I really enjoyed the remake of Resident Evil 2 that came out, because it was a mechanically sound game. It felt nice to play. It had the right amount of jump scares, right amount of zombie killing, right amount of difficulty, and it just worked, and it was great. I love the Resident Evil 2 remake that came out early last year, or early the year before. I don't know what year it is. Who knows? fantastic. I really enjoyed it. However, Resident Evil 3 remake, on the other hand, £60 full price for a game that is basically the game we just played, but not as good, because half of the year is cut off.
Okay. My thoughts on the Resident Evil 3 remake. I didn't hate it like you did. I wasn't as grossly offended as I think you are by it. I agree. I think it was overpriced for what it was. It should have been. It should have came out at $40, £35.
This is what I'm saying though. It goes back to your thing of it wasn't what we were kind of
sure.
I'm not even promised, because obviously the original Resident Evil 3 is just the same game as 2.
Yeah,
but
that's what I was just about to say.
Right, obviously that makes sense.
Yeah.
However, you would think that they would try and at least make it a little bit different and a little bit better for the price that you're getting at.
The reason that I wasn't as grossly offended is because I played, back in the day when I was away, and I played the originals on PS1. So I always, as you're saying, kind of connect 2 and 3 in my head as just being more of the same. Resident Evil 3 was more of the same of what 2 was. So when we get to this HD up-res era, I just kind of expected 3 to be more of what 2 was, which it was. However, as you're saying, it was a lot, obviously a lot shorter, and they still charge full price for it, and they were obviously riding the critical hype train that they were on from Seven and Resident Evil 7 and the Resident Evil 2 remake. I'm fine with 3, but I mean, the mark to me of a great game is, have I platinumed it or have I chased the platinum trophy? Like, I don't know if you're at your trophies on PlayStation. I used to be a trophy whore. Like, I used to play garbage just for trophies. Like, when I was a child, when I was like 13, 14, right? And then, as I got older, I just didn't care anymore, right? And then when I got to, I don't know, when I left school, say I was 18 or 19, I was kind of like, right, this is how I'm going to take it. If this game earns my time and my kind of, I don't know, yeah, my time, I guess, because I don't have that much time in a week to play a game. I'm busy and I work, so if that game earns that, then I will put that time in it and I will go for the platinum. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I did it with God of War, I did it with Resident Evil 2 Remake, which was a really, both of them were really hard ones, actually.
I was going to say God of War is a fucking...
See that Last Valkyrie?
Yeah. Jesus Christ, man. I really enjoyed the story of that, and I probably won't watch it if you play it more, but my mate, who, he's the same as you, platinum's everything, like,
right.
Platinum Last of Us and all that, like...
I'm not that crazy, I love Last of Us, I'm not that crazy.
You played it on the fucking hardest difficulty several times.
You need to play all the online and stuff? Oh, no.
Yeah, no, he pretty much got the platinum for it, because he'd done all the online shit.
I love Last of Us, but even I don't love it that much. Yeah, so the first Last of Us, by the way. Last of Us 2 review on the website, you can see why I don't love that. sorry, what was saying there about going for the platinum? Yeah. The fact that in Resident Evil 3 I didn't even consider it speaks volumes. Do you know what I mean? I played through it, it was a short week game. I didn't buy it full price, I didn't buy it when it came out because I kind of read somewhere that it wasn't worth the money, so I waited for it to drop, you know, 20, 30 quid, and then I bought it. Played through it, took me about 7 hours, and then that was me. I was done. I was like, okay.
Pick it up now.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely think...
Like 15, 20 quid.
Yeah, if you like Resident Evil 2 and you want a bit more of expansion on the story and stuff like that, then go for it.
That's
what it should have been. It should have been the expansion to the Resident Evil 2.
Yes. But game studios be game studios. That's what they do. They make expansions into full games because they want to make their money. Look at Saints Row 4. Look at so many... Look at... topical. I wrote an Agandera Gaming article on this the other week about how the kind of... The paradigm has shifted on DLC in games because, like you're saying, Mass, back in the day, like Saints Row 4 and shit like that, they were just, that DLC is quite meaty, let's just make it a full game. Yeah. Whereas now, they've managed to find that in between, releasing things like Ghost of Tsushima and Spider-Man Miles Morales and Uncharted Lost Legacy.
See, these are all, and those are all exactly, but that's those I'm fully willing to pay full price for them. Because they're so well done,
yeah.
And the fact they were probably being worked on at the same time as the original game,
well,
or will be worked on slightly after. Like, okay, they're reusing the same assets, but it still works because the original game is so well crafted that they don't skimp out.
My gander at gaming article I wrote on it was basically don't just discount these as being DLC. Yeah, like, look at them as a kind of a new entry. But there was also a lot of controversy with the pricing of Ghost of Tsushima, which I don't have a problem with. I'll pay, I think it's 20 extra quid if you've already got the base game. I'm happy to do that, but what's it called, Spider-Man Miles Morales, I did think they had about a cheap charging full price for that, but because they didn't for Lost Legacy, that wasn't a full price game.
But I think as well, Miles Morales as well as a game is a completely different...
Well, I think the main reason for it was that it was the next generation. I think it's because that was one of the first PS5 games. I think that's why it was full price.
Also that as well. But I think as well, if you look at it, it does feel... My friend of mine has a PS5, so I've managed to play it before. And it does feel like a completely different game than the original PS4 Spider-Man game, which I absolutely adore. I fucking love that game.
I've still not played Miles Morales because I'm waiting. I know you can get it PS4, but I'm waiting for the PS5
version. That's one of the only games I think I platinumed in recent years was the Spider-Man.
The main Spider-Man game.
The main Spider-Man game is one of the only games that I platinumed in a while.
That's a fun platinum.
It's so good.
That was a fun platinum.
I didn't platinum all the DLC shit, but I definitely platinumed the base game.
Yeah, me too. Fucking DLC doesn't count. get platinum. You don't need... It does bother my OCD though, so you may get the platinum and then you release DLC and your percentage goes down from 100 to like 76. You're like, but not enough to actually complete it.
Anyway, I think that me and you probably have the same last one.
Which is?
Cyberpunk.
Yeah,
there we go.
Again, review on the website for Cyberpunk.
Yep,
but yeah, I mean, how can we talk about the biggest disappointments in the last sort of 10 years and not mention Cyberpunk? What a great example of so much hype, so much goodwill because of The Witcher, so much.
I'm not mad
on The Witcher. It's fine. I feel like there's too much to do in those games personally, but it's fine, right? The Witcher's fine, but everybody loves it, right? So you had all that goodwill. You've got Keanu, who everybody loves. You've got all that goodwill. How do you mess that up? By somehow making Keanu into an insufferable arsehole, which is genuinely an incredible feat because he's such a likable guy. Like, yeah. How do you turn him into a dick?
Even as a murderous assassin, he's still a likable dude. You know, fucking John Wick, he's still a likable dude.
What's his name in it? Johnny
Silverhand.
Yeah, like, what a terrible character.
What a terrible name, by the way, as well.
And then the fact that going in, again, talking about the thing we were talking about earlier, where, like, we're never going to get the game that we were promised. The fact that alone that they made Johnny Silverhand just a kind of ghost in your head, and he wasn't actually there the whole time, that was super deceiving, I think, because we didn't know about that until, like, what, 2 months before the actual game came out?
Yeah.
So everybody thought you'd be running about with Keanu doing all that stuff, and, like, okay, you sort of are, but he's just like a ghost, he doesn't actually interact with anything, and he just kind of speaks to you, and, like, it just feels so disconnected from what we all expected. And then, obviously, the trailers looked incredible, they didn't live up to the hype, and just a mess.
I feel like it was people, and then people tried to point out genuine criticisms before the game came out, but it just, people were so blinded by the hype.
I will hold my hands up and say that I was on that hype train because all through that year, right, that it came out also the end of the year that COVID hit, right, so it was already a bit of a shit year, and in that whole year things were coming out. The other big releases were The Last of Us 2, which when that came out, I was insanely let down. So was a lot of the internet. But
you have to admit, gameplay wise, The Last of Us 2
technically is one of the greatest games ever made.
Right?
Probably is the greatest game ever made in terms of looks, in terms of gameplay, in terms of just how smooth it all is, and the AI and the voice acting. Presentation wise, it's a perfect game. It is a perfect game.
In the year of a pandemic as well. Anyway, I digress.
It's the writing that lets it down, but that's beside the point, right? Go and read my review if you want to go into it. So that came out, right, and I was hugely disappointed by that because I was really, really attached to those characters, and what they did to them pissed me off. But then I was like, do you know what? It's fine. We'll get Cyberpunk at the end of the year. It's going to be fine. It's too big to fail. Do you know what I mean? It was that whole thing in my head. I was like, nah, there's no chance. Like, same with Batman v Superman. There's no chance we'll mess this up. And then Ghost of Tsushima. I think it actually came out before Last of Us, but I played it afterwards.
Yeah.
I got that, and my mates were really hyped. And they were like, oh, you need to play this. And I played it. And again, it's a bit divisive, but I love Ghost of Tsushima.
I need to go back and finish it. I shamefully haven't finished it.
Oh, it's great. Then it's good as well.
I need to properly finish it.
You should do that for DLC coming out. Phenomenal. But even at that time, I didn't allow myself to enjoy it as much as I should have because I was still like, this is good, but we've got Cyberpunk coming. Do you know what I mean? And see, in hindsight, I love Ghost of Tsushima even more because of how much I let down Cyberpunk was. To be fair, I didn't buy the game on release because I don't pre-order games at this point anymore because of this reason.
I didn't buy it on release, but then
there was all the horrible sort of things about how the game doesn't work, blah, blah, blah. And then, obviously, I was going to wait because I knew there was a patch coming January, February time, but my other half bought me for Christmas. So that was when I started playing it, was like Christmas of this year. And, I mean, all in all, there's not that many. I do mention some bugs in my review. But all in all, it was never unplayable for me. It crashed a few times, but it was never unplayable. It just took a bit of stuff, kind of thing.
What version did you play of the game?
I played it on PS4. I don't have a PS5.
Oh, so it wasn't actually... That's interesting.
I played it on PS4. I also have it on PC, and I played a wee bit of it on PC. I get some weird discount thing. I think it was something I bought from a PC, came with like a half price code or some shit. So I've got it in PC as well. And honestly, the main reason that I bought it on PC was to to see the difference. Like before, I was just before I wrote my review. Actually, I wanted to see the difference to see if, like, is this, am I reviewing the PS4 version and the actual version's so much different? It's not. That's why I just wrote my review based mostly on my experience on PS4. Because if it had been totally different, I would have probably played it again and then based my review on that. But it wasn't night and day at all. It was very similar, like slightly up-res graphics, slightly quicker loading times, but other than that, it was the same.
Here's my thing.
It still crashed every now and again. I still
haven't played Cyberpunk yet.
Okay.
Because in my heart, I still want the dream to kind of be alive, that it could be a good game. And I want it to have the No Man's Sky thing, right? But it's a game that a year or two down the line, you revisit it, and it still works, and it's great, and it actually is a good game, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, from what I've heard, it doesn't make it much of a difference. As you said, it doesn't make much of a difference 6 months, 8 months down the line.
Well, that's...
I probably will get to playing it.
Yeah,
because I like the concept, I like the idea, and I think I would be into it because I fucking love my fucking RPGs and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things that I am very much an outsider because I haven't actually touched and played the game, but I definitely will play it at some point. But at the same time, I did do a lot of research before.
Yeah, what I would say,
in gaming culture for a while.
I mean, I gave the game 6 months because I thought that was fair. I thought,
which is reasonable.
Let's give it 6 months to see what other patches come, and if your game's not ready by that time, maybe I'm impatient. Like, again, this is something that everybody will need to decide their own kind of bar on how long they're willing to wait. But if a game's not ready 6 months after its release, it's had its chance. Like, I'm sorry. What I would say to you is, let go of the dream that you're ever going to get the game that we were promised. But that said, that doesn't mean if you wait a year or two, you still won't get a great game. You might, but it will not be the game that you're promised. Do you know what I mean? That's what I would say. What a disappointment. What a letdown.
What a terrible, terrible life we live in. What a terrible way to end off the COVID year with Cyberpunk.
I know. Final pick in the balls.
I think that pretty much caps off the games that we wish were better, or the crushingly disappointing game, whatever we're going to call this episode.
Just before we move on to news, do you have any comics?
Oh, comics-wise, here's the thing. I don't have that many things. Oh, God, this is going to sound so fucking bad if I say this. Okay, let me preface this.
Sure.
I like Watchmen.
Okay.
I like the comic.
Okay.
I think it's a great comic. Do I think it's as good as everyone says it is? No.
Okay.
That's my personal opinion.
Interesting.
I haven't read it in a few years, so maybe if I reread it, I'll enjoy it more.
Can you go into your issues? Do you know why? Is it because, does it feel dated? Is it the art?
I think it's made, the art's great.
Right.
I think it's dated.
Right.
I think the issue with it being dated is more, I've seen the concept, the ideas in so much other media that it is no longer as revolutionary as it came out. Like, I know what it is as being like this masterstroke full, like, masterpiece comic, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, that talks about the social, political and economical struggles of that period of time.
Yeah.
Right? And obviously talks about the idea of how superheroes would be if they actually react to the real situation. And there is a numerous other themes that exist in that comic, right?
Yeah.
And to go into them, I'd probably have to write a whole video essay on it or something along those lines. You know, can't really do it justice in the podcast. But I will say this, is that I like the comic. I like the art and the story is good. But is it as good as everyone says it is? No.
Right. See what you're saying there, what you're describing, that is genuinely how I feel about The Dark Knight Returns.
Okay.
I love Watchmen. Like, I think Watchmen's phenomenal, and I do think it lives up to the hype. But when I first read The Dark Knight Returns, I was expecting something else.
Mind you, I haven't read Watchmen in a while, so I could probably, maybe if I reread it, I might completely change my view of it. But the memory and the things I have of Watchmen is that thing of, like, it didn't strike a chord as much as people probably expect it to. I still think it's a great comic book.
Yeah.
And by no means is it a crushing disappointment. It's just something that it didn't really... Like, it's not something I go and sit... Like, it's not like my All-Star Superman.
Yeah.
My All-Star, I will read that at least once a year. Like, that kind of thing. That's my kind of comic book I read. One. Like, it's not one of those things for me.
That's like me for Long Halloween. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fascinating because everything you said there, I would just echo that for Dark Knight Returns. I like it, it's fine, but it's just not not what I wanted. Yeah, interesting. But talking of the Dark Knight Returns, I don't really know why I'm super hyped for Dark Knight Returns 3. Because obviously Dark Knight Strikes Again was yeah. horrible bad. However, the Dark Knight Returns 3 I was quite hyped for, and I did pre-order the hardcover, mostly because of Jim Lee's art. I pre-ordered the first issue hardcover, because I had like a black and white Jim Lee art piece on it, which was really cool. And yeah, Dark Knight Returns 3 was a huge letdown, so that's kind of my most recent comic, I think, that I've found to be a massive letdown. But in terms of classic comics, yeah, I'd say Dark Knight Returns for me, it's a good book. There's, as you're saying, there's also elements from it that are kind of historically relevant.
Yeah, like
I think will be for years to come. But yeah, it just, yeah,
it's like you know, it's just one of those things of like there are definitely. It's a weird one, right? It is those things of like we're a comic book podcast, right? We write and review comic books. But honestly, I don't know. There's not much else I can really say on it, I'll be honest.
No, that's interesting, man. I always like hearing an outside, like, something different.
Is it bad? It's just not what everyone thinks it should be, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's how I feel about Dark Knight Returns.
It's a good book.
A good way to put it, I think, is, like, when people talk about Dark Knight Returns, I'm like, are you talking about the same comic book that I read? Like, I feel a disconnect there. I feel like you got something. You clearly got something else out of this compared to what I got out of it.
Yeah.
So I guess that's like you with Watchmen. Like,
there you go. That's it. But yeah, no, that's probably the absolute bombshell. Ian would usually have the hot takes noise that would be in here.
Yeah.
But as we don't have that at the moment.
Do you know what? I'm going to try.
Yeah.
Did it work?
It worked.
Hell yeah! I could have played the intro. Oh well.
That's fine. Play the outro, it'll be fine. there we go. It works. Yeah, so that's our hot takes on Dark Knight Returns.
Yes. All that bullshit said, we move on to news because we're nearly
that. That's it. We're almost an hour. Right, so news of the week. Does that sound work?
Backless.
News of the week.
Right, yeah, that goes on way too long.
There we go. So, this week on News of the Week, we have a pretty dry news week, all things considered, I'll be honest.
Yep.
Not great. But I think kind of the main one, and, you know, we love to talk about DC films, and we love to talk about Marvel films. And one of these underrated DC characters that I actually have a lot of personal love for from stuff like Young Justice and the Brave and the Bold stuff that came out with, I think it was Blue Beetle and Hardware back in the day, is the Blue Beetle has maybe got its leading man with, I don't know how to pronounce his name, is it Zolo Man?
I think it's Zolo.
Zolo Mariduena is his name. And he is the kid off of Cobra Kai, who is fantastic.
What I find interesting about this news, I don't watch Cobra Kai, so I don't have an opinion on him. I have heard that. But the Blue Beetle, they said they're fiercely on about the planet, and I think they hit the nail on the head. Shout out to Beetle Planet. They were saying how Blue Beetle could be a character like Ant-Man, or maybe even Spider-Man. Like, he is a really good character, and if he was more popular, he could be a kind of tentpole for DC. So, hopefully, maybe that's what this will lead to.
Well, he kind of came out and recently said that he shares his thoughts on the big role and what it means to him. Mariduena told Variety's Mark Mack and how thrilling it is to bring a Latino superhero to DC's expanding universe and how important representation is in the world, including the world of DC. So I think it's almost all but confirmed that he'll be part of it.
Sure. Okay.
Like, I don't know how official the casting is, but apparently, yeah, he said, since I got the invitation for DC to work on this project, I couldn't stop seeing him as the character, Soto said. So this is the director. And then when Soto and Manduena confirmed he had the role,
Yep.
And when I just found out 24 hours prior, so he is officially confirmed as Blue Beetle. And it's going to be the Blue Beetle film is set to film sometime early next year and exclusively for HBO Max. And we're kind of seeing this more often is that they are the HBO Max exclusive films, which I think is going to be great because I feel like they're going to be disconnected from this weird DCEU bullshit. It's going to be some individual stuff written and directed by different people. The same as how I think the Batgirl film is going to probably be quite good as well because it's Barbara Gordon.
I think that's great and I hope you're right, but what I'm worried is, yes, it will be separate from the DCU, but they try and do their own HBO universe.
So,
that's what I'm worried about.
I think determining how, see, Peacemaker is successful, it'll determine how much Medellin's involved in the other ones. I think.
Yeah.
I think personally. Because Suicide Squad's massive hit. And the Peacemaker show apparently is very fun, very wacky, and HBO have a lot of confidence in it because it got greenlit almost immediately. James Gunn wrote Peacemaker as a joke thing,
yeah,
like as a writing exercise during quarantine, and it just got greenlit.
My thing with that, like I was before I saw Suicide Squad, I was like, oh, I like John Cena, I'm glad he's getting his own show, that might be interesting. And then I saw the movie, and I'm like, I don't like that character. I didn't like Peacemaker.
I think he's an asshole, but I like it because it's a different take.
I don't find him funny though. I normally do find John Cena funny. I don't like the writing. I wasn't mad on Suicide Squad.
I think we'll talk about that towards the end.
Yeah,
I've went to see Suicide Squad since the last podcast because I went to see it on Sunday, the day after we,
cool.
Yeah, we filmed. But yeah, I think Mary Duena is going to be a fantastic addition is Blue Beetle, and I feel like Blue Beetle is definitely one of those ones that will be give a lot of reputation to people and will be hopefully be a fantastic film if it's got the right writing. What else have we got in terms of news, Dan?
Well, the second one's kind of interesting. Seth MacFarlane recently came out and basically said that he's gutted that he's a part of the Fox network via Family Guy. My thing about this, right, Seth MacFarlane, I don't know what your opinion is on him. I think regardless of him as a person, right, I don't love him. I think he's talented. But regardless of him as a person, I think it's a lot easier to say this as, what is he, in his 40s, he's very successful, multimillionaire, has one of the biggest shows still on TV. Very easy to say what he's saying from that position. Not easy to say it 20 years ago when he was a struggling writer trying to get his show.
Family Guy was cancelled once and then
reboot. Exactly. What he's saying, you're speaking out now, but see, 20 years ago, you sold out the same as anybody else would to Fox. Anybody at that stage in your career, I mean, maybe everybody's different, everybody's got their own morals and stuff, right? But at that stage in your career, you just want to get your project off the ground and see if the devil offers you money, you take it. And it's very easy if you become a multimillionaire and become very successful years later to say, oh, that company's a devil. But see, 20 years ago,
Yeah. I think, especially as well, is that I'm not a big fan of Family Guy. I think it's all right. I'm not a big fan of American Dad. I think it's okay.
Family Guy is nostalgia for me at this point.
It is, isn't it? And I think, for me personally, I think that one of the smartest projects he's done in years is The Orville.
I've not seen it.
It's really good. I think the first season is okay. It definitely starts off very generic and kind of becomes better as time kind of went on, kind of thing. I think it got cancelled, I believe. I can't quite remember. But I thought it was a good show, and it was actually something that was quite enjoyable. And a bit different for him to stretch out, you know. Other than, you know, experiences with stuff like Blue Harvest and all the Family Guy parodies of Star Wars, it was an actual kind of interesting, unique and almost individual thing about space exploration in a very Star Trek-esque way, but also being quite funny.
Right.
Anyway, regardless of that, I feel like I completely agree with the fact that he did completely probably sell out, and as you said, now he's in his tower, he's in his white ivory tower, and he's looking down and he's saying, well, I regret doing this.
Yeah, it's easy to throw stones when you're as you're saying, the ivory tower. Yeah, just like, yeah, okay, mate, sure. You don't like, what a controversial thing to say, you don't like Fox News. Like, oh, wow, like, whoa, the balls in this guy.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, it's kind of a nothing story.
Yeah, pretty much is. Again, I think there's not a lot of stuff that's really happened. I think one of the biggest ones for me personally that happened, this goes back to something that me and Ian talked about a few weeks back, is that the Blizzard president has officially stepped down.
Yes.
After all of the controversy, after the weeks and weeks of litigation that's been happening or is about to happen, currently going on, and all of the testimonies of people coming out saying the work culture was toxic and all the evidence that has now come to light, the guy at the top who has apparently been, in some aspects, involved, has now stepped down.
I mean, you couldn't not step down.
It's a controversy you'll never recover from.
No, and obviously his lawyers have told him that as well.
Yeah.
The thing that the most, like, I don't know, I feel like it's easy to sit here as two guys and be like, fucking more support for women. But like, see, at the end of the day, the thing, if you want to talk about how it affects you personally, the thing that affects me personally, this story, it puts me off wanting to get into the gaming industry. Like, I did animation at uni. Obviously, I love writing about games. I'd love to be involved in that industry in some way. And there's money to be made in that industry. It's not the most solid long-term thing, but it's a big
$1
industry, right?
It's a growing industry.
And especially for young people, you know, young men and women and NDLs that want to get involved. Like, at that stage, going to uni, going to college, be excited to get into this kind of thing. And then a story like this comes out, and you're like, why would anyone want to be a part of this, especially from one of the biggest companies in the world? Like, there was, I won't go into it too deeply because I don't really remember that much about it, I don't want to misspeak, but a similar thing happened just before or just after Detroit Become Human came out over at Quantic Dream. Similar stories of toxicity, boys club sexism and all the rest of it. And that was one thing, because it was still a Sony first party studio, it was still a big deal. But I mean, Blizzard and Activision are like one of the big three, I'd say, companies in the world. Like, it's insane. It would be like Apple or Netflix or Amazon. Do you know what I mean? That's the kind of level we're talking here in the gaming industry. It's crazy.
Here's the thing. I don't really play a lot of Blizzard games, right?
Me neither.
The main Blizzard game I play is Overwatch.
Right.
And now I have to play that. I play that game because I enjoy it. But now I feel that every time I play that game, I feel guilty. It's not a passive thing. Oh, I will never play another Blizzard game because It just feels like that because you know
what went on while this game is being developed. Yes.
It's not going to stop me from playing the game, mind you, because I feel like it's ludicrous to say such a thing because I enjoy it. But it still pangs at the back of my head. You know. We talked about it 2 weeks ago. And we can't go with it the same, is that we, as we say, we're a predominantly male-hosted podcast and stuff like that, right? We're all just dudes and stuff like that, which means our opinion is worth a grain of salt in the grand scheme of things. Because
dudes do dude things.
But I am completely anti-bro culture, anti-frat culture, stuff like that. I fucking hate that shit. And I just think as well, if there's anybody out there who's listening to this who is, I don't know, one of our 30 viewers, if they're listening to this, if even us talking about this brings to light something that you didn't know about before and makes you want to research it and makes you want to understand the situation that's currently going on, we're at least thankful for that, and we appreciate the fact that people are going to do that.
But also, if, like you're saying, it's easy for us to talk about this when we've never really experienced it, if you are in the boat where this, you feel like this is affecting you more than it is us two, again, and you know what, talk about it in the comments and like educate us. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm always willing to hear it from another perspective because it's easy to look at it from your perspective. But
also as well, if you feel like you maybe experienced something like this, similar to at your own workplace, don't be afraid to contact those like your HR department or those that you're working with. Like, find someone to talk to and find someone to deal with your issues with. And obviously, it's easier said than done. But at the end of the day, it's the only way you're going to make a difference for yourself and other people is if you come forward with stories.
The only good thing to take away from this is at least it came out. At least it's not still happening. That's the one takeaway. Like, it's horrible that it happened for as long as it did and that it went on with everybody knowing about it, and this, especially this guy that stepped down and all the rest of it and all these cover-ups, and it's horrific, but at least it came out eventually.
It seems to come out too little too late, in my opinion.
I think if it comes out at any time, it's going to hopefully prevent it happening again in the future. Therefore, it's a good thing.
Well, regardless, fingers crossed, hopefully it does. Yeah. It's one of those sober pieces of news that we have to talk about because it is...
As related, so and especially, as I said, for somebody like myself that's wanting to get in the industry, it is so off-putting and so disheartening. Because that's not...
in reality, though,
it's not the type of environment I want to work in, and I'm not even a female. Do you know what I mean? So how exactly. must it feel if you're a young female wanting to get in the industry? Like, it's horrible to hear, man.
Well, regardless of that, we'll move on from that very, very... sombering piece of news story.
Scumbags.
Scumbags, a lot of them. All those bastards over at fucking Blizzard 2 actually facilitated that behaviour. Regardless, in terms of other kind of big news stories this week, and kind of positive news, after kind of, I believe, suffering a medical issue, Bob Odenkirk has said that he is on the mend.
Hell yeah. Well, that's made my week, man.
Fantastic. What was the specific issue? Do you know, Dan?
It was a small heart attack.
It was a small heart attack.
Yeah, he took a small heart attack. However, they were able to sort of resuscitate him and get him up and going again without doing surgery, which is also good.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know who Bob Odenkirk is, he's been in recent smash hit films like Nobody.
With Ian Lipsick.
He's also on. He was also on Breaking Bad for a few seasons and on Breaking Bad spin-off show Better Call Saul. He is also a major comedian on the fucking comedy circuit for years and years and years in the US. Has appeared on tons of sketch shows. Has loads of writing credits and is arguably one of the funniest men in the industry.
And just seems like a normal
and
nice
dude. Normal dude, and we're so fucking glad that, you know, obviously small podcast, all that shit, but I think everyone is glad to see he's back on the mend and he's doing well.
Yeah, it's great.
Including obviously all the studios as well, like AMC and stuff,
so and I'm buzzing for the final season of Better Call Saul.
There you go, that's always positive. Hopefully he can get back to work on his projects and stuff like that and stay safe. Goodness, I think in terms of news there's a few other things here.
I don't know. Do you want to sweep across all the Guardian stuff?
Yeah, if you want to, go for it, yeah.
I mean, the first thing was that James Gunn says he wanted to get Ravagers show off the ground on the back of, obviously, his press tour he's doing now for Suicide Squad.
Yep, and also the fact he managed to get a Peacemaker show greenlit almost immediately.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. That must help. Yeah, I mean, again, I know that I've spoken about James Gunn in the past, but the more content, the better. If that happened, I'd certainly watch it.
I feel like, although there isn't proof of some of the stuff, obviously we can't, complete speculation, speculatory and stuff like that. Some of the stuff that he has came out and said in the past, he did apologise for. But as a director and a filmmaker, he is A-game, you know, ace is top of his game, all that stuff. And he said more content better at that.
What it also sounds like, if for whatever reason, obviously I know Marvel have taken back for Guardians 3, right, and they're doing this Christmas special thing, and also this Ravager TV show they're talking about, but if that does fall through, Warner Bros. Have said that they want him back to make more movies for them, so really he's fine, he's got a cushion, do you know what I mean, he's got a
He's the most wanted man in Hollywood, for the positive reasons.
Which I don't get, but sure, some people like Nah, I mean, he clearly did something right. There's also, I don't know if you caught this, because you've obviously seen the film as well, in Suicide Squad, there's apparently a secret cameo from
different Guardians. I couldn't find, like, what is this in relation to?
In Suicide Squad, I don't know if it's a member of the Guardians or something, but apparently there's a cameo, somebody from the Guardians movies is in Suicide Squad, in the background of a shot, or in the corner of a frame or something. I didn't catch it at all, and I've not seen MD Online catching it yet, but, yeah.
Yeah, I've not seen
it. I mean, I've seen that, what's it called, Suicide Squad is now on streaming, so I might re-watch it with that in mind, because I don't think I've seen it again. I've seen it somewhere last week. So, yeah, I might watch it again and see if I can spot that.
I've got an Odeon pass, so I might just go to the cinema.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I didn't get myself one then.
I live 10 minutes away from...
I've been saying for years I need to get one, because the amount that we go to the cinema, but... there's always something coming up, like a house, so I'll get one eventually.
There you go.
Do you want to touch on this Quentin Tarantino thing? Because I think this is fascinating.
Go for it. It does sound very interesting.
What I don't understand, right?
It's a weird one, right?
No, but the main thing, regardless of just this specifically, Tarantino loves saying this is, I'm only doing 10 movies. That's maybe going to be my last movie. But then he still comes away with all these ideas for a movie. He wants to do a horror film. He wants to do a Star Trek film. He wants to do a Rambo movie. It's like, and then he wants to do a Kill Bill 3. He wants to follow that up. So I'm like, why limit yourself? Like, I guess maybe direct one more and then just write movies for then on and let somebody else direct. I guess he could do that. But I just like, if you have all these ideas, like, why are you retiring? Like, I mean, it's up to him. He's made his money. He's maybe wants to go and start a family. Fair enough. Like, I'm not saying, like, you have to keep making movies. Do what you want. But I'm just like, you clearly still have the passion for it, so...
Who is Tarantino's wife? So I know it's kind of unrelated.
I don't know if they're married, but I know that his other half is a young model. but I don't know if they're married. I think she's just a girlfriend. I'm not 100%.
Well, I mean, Tarantino's a freaky dude.
Yep.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, well, again, that's the thing. Like, we love to sit here and talk and bash, but I love to sit and bash James Gunn. Tarantino's a weird dude as well. Like, I love his work, but if something scandalous came out about him, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, all of the feet, man. All of the feet.
But listen, I watch his films till the cows come home, man. I love that guy's work, so...
Can we just cut out all the feet scenes from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? We have a film that's under
half the movie.
In terms of, I mean, how did I segue out of that?
He was clearly taking the piss, though. I'm convinced. He's seen the meme. Right. He must have seen the meme and was like, "I'm going to run with this man."
He's got to.
Right? Yeah, got to be.
I can't really segue out of this one, so I'm just going to move on. So, Ryan Reynolds says that there's a 70% chance of Deadpool 3 starting production next year. Woo! We're going to get an MCU Deadpool film. Deadpool? She's good. Deadpool film.
Sure. I mean, I think I'm kind of like looking forward to it because, as you're saying, it's going to be quite interesting seeing how this Deadpool that the characters people use as profanity is going to fit in the MCU. But at the end of the day, you kind of know what it's going to be. Deadpool's going to make a joke about being censored by Disney. He's going to make a joke about how this film took so long because of the Disney acquisition of Fox. He's going to, like, you can pretty much write it yourself. Do you know what I mean? Like,
meta boy.
I'm looking forward to it, but at this point, you're like, you know what you're getting, right?
You know,
like,
what you're getting. It isn't a bad thing.
What I'm more looking forward to, more interested in, is I hope he appears in a group movie. Doesn't necessarily need to be an Avengers movie, but let me see him interacting with other characters. That would be fascinating.
I hope he appears in What If.
Yeah, sure. But that, and I know that they said that's canon, but it's not really. Like, fuck off.
Multiversal canon.
I want to see him in a mainline group movie. Like, it doesn't need to be Avengers, it could be a Guardians movie, or even just like a Thor movie if he turns up or something like that. I think that would be interesting. I think just seeing him in his own film, it's going to feel like the first two Deadpools which you've seen, except with more references to the MCU. That's all it's going to be. Whereas you put him in a movie with, I don't know, like the Young Avengers, like, what does that look like?
Just weird Deadpool.
That would be interesting.
Father figure.
That's what I want to see.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, 100%. I think we're all kind of excited. I like the first two Deadpool films.
Yeah, review on the website for both. From your trailer.
Of course there is that. There you go. And yeah.
I should really just list the ones I don't have reviews for.
I don't have a review for this one. I have a review in the making for this one.
I'm sorry that I worked too hard, right?
I'm sorry to keep the website afloat. Anyway, I think that's kind of the main news of the week. I think the only other thing is the fact that Joseph Gordon-Levitt has no idea about any of the DC stuff when he was asked about if he would come back and play Nightwing.
Yeah, I just put that as a friend up for him.
It's funny, the quote is amazing. Offer is done.
I don't have it to hand. So he said, to be perfectly honest and completely out of touch with everything you just said. That was GGL's response when he got asked if he'd play Nightwing alongside Batfleck and Michael Keaton as Batman. It really reminded me of, which is funny, Harrison Ford. Oh. When Harrison Ford got asked if Hannah Greedo shot first, and he just looked at the camera and went, "I don't care." Like, that was that moment. I was like, "Good for you, man! You don't give a shit."
It reminds me of the time when Bruce Willis didn't know what anime was.
Yeah, sure.
He was like, "Is that some sort of Norwegian?"
I mean, at the end of the day, these people are actors, they're not necessarily into all the stuff that they're in. Like, it's fine.
Exactly, it's funny. Those things, like, oh man.
Yeah, it's
but
good.
It's funny. It's funny to see that. Like, he pays the fact that he was a random character in a Batman Christopher Nolan film, what, almost 2 decades ago? No, 15 years ago now?
Yeah, something along those lines.
It's funny as it pay in mind. I think that's pretty much wrap though for news of the week. I don't really believe there's a lot else to talk about because it's been pretty dry. This is, by the way, recorded on a Saturday, which means if something comes out today or tomorrow and we don't talk about it, we're very sorry.
As you said, I think that's everything kind of covered. I don't know if you want to move on to like what we've been playing and writing about and
I'm happy with that.
Watching.
Yeah. We're just
we don't have a theme for that, so that's just this section now. I won't put in the theme stuff.
You can soundbite me doing that and maybe a little bit. Just do something.
just get nasty, hum it. The main thing I've been playing, I don't know if Ian Lynn will listen back to this, but he will be pleased to know that I finally got around to playing Doom Eternal. And the small amount of spare time that I've had over the last 2 weeks. Doom Eternal is great. It's more Doom. And it's probably better. I feel like the last Doom was quite bogged down with a lot of the story. A lot of the last Doom, it was like, oh, you have to care, and this dialogue happens, and this unskippable cutscene. And do you know what I hate? See those parts in games. If I ever make a game, I vow never to do this. See those parts in games where it forces you to walk and listen to dialogue, like you can't run, you have to walk. I hate that. The first Doom had a lot of that, whereas this one, it's not really as concerned about that. It's just more just shoot demons and have fun and pop music, which is why you play Doom. I'm really enjoying that. Really enjoying that. Besides that, I rewatched the Blade Runner movies because Denis Villeneuve is doing Dune at the end of the year. I rewatched Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049 and wrote reviews for them, which are both on the website.
There you go.
And I also wrote another Gander at Gaming piece. I think this is part 5 in the Gander at Gaming series, and it was, well, my last one was the greatest era of video games ever, but part 5, I'm struggling to remember what the hell I wrote about.
Is the one talking about gaming culture and DLCs, or is that
one? Yes, it's about premature endorsement. It's about basically about pre-ordering a game before you know anything about it, and please stop doing it, because at the end of the day, you vote with your wallet. You buying a game that isn't out yet, when it comes out, it's disappointing. If you pre-order that thing, then you're supporting that. You are the problem. So stop doing it.
You're feeding your basic abusers at that point.
Yeah, guilty by association, as far as I'm concerned. Kill the traitors. So that's kind of what I've been doing. What have you been watching?
Oh, myself? Man. I haven't been that busy, but I mentioned, obviously, I got past the local to one of the cinemas near me. And I went to see Suicide Squad on Sunday, the day after we recorded the podcast. And then I went to go see Jungle Cruise on Wednesday. And I thought it was fine.
Okay.
It's a very fun film.
Okay.
It's kind of feels like it's trying to be Pirates of the Caribbean and also trying to be Indiana Jones. But I don't mind that, because I like The Rock, and I like Emily Blunt, and Jack Whitehall wasn't nearly as annoying as I thought he was going to be. And overall, it's a pretty enjoyable film.
Cool.
You know, I just think it was pretty good.
I think Michael wrote a review for that for the website.
He tore it apart.
I can't comment, I've not seen it.
I think it's a completely adequate film.
Although,
you should definitely take your children to go see.
I did see it on streaming the other night again, so I might watch it at some point. I'm not fussed about it, but
I think it's always worth a watch, and I think I understand that it's very heavily influenced by Pirates of the Caribbean, in a lot of ways.
But do you know what? So are a lot of movies. Like,
why not? Exactly. Who knows?
It's a formula, isn't it? So
exactly. So in terms of other kind of stuff this week, I'll be playing more video games. We do love them. As I mentioned earlier on, I'd be playing Overwatch. People don't need to know about that. It's a great game. It's a pretty good multiplayer game. It's kind of fun.
And Massimo is going to court because he's been playing Overwatch. Guilty by association.
What else have I done? I watched I mentioned it last time, I think it was on, Ted Lasso.
Yes.
Phenomenal show, great. Again, not really comic book related, but just a really fun show to watch. And also another of those things, a very heartwarming thing. And it's a show about football, and that's the proper football for any Americans that are listening. If
yes.
And it's a show about more about the humanity and the people are behind the football club rather than the game itself, which is very, very enjoyable. And also, actually, kind of the other thing I've been playing, and I played it last night for the first time, is a game called Splitgate.
Okay.
Which I don't know if you've heard about that.
At all.
It's a game that is, apparently, it's in beta. It's been out for a few years, but it was in alpha and stuff like that. It's beta. And it's basically, it's a first-person shooter, but it has the portals from Portal.
Oh, cool.
And it is super fun to play. It's very, very Halo-esque.
Is it first person or is it top down?
First person.
Yeah,
first person.
It's
very Halo, like very like almost like right. Like you played Halo or Halo 2.
Is this on PC, Mass? Yeah,
it's on PC and PlayStation and Xbox. Oh, cool. And also PS5 as well. It's crossplay.
Oh, cool. I've not heard of this.
It's on Steam. I definitely think it's worth a shot. It's quite. I was playing with my mates. Very, very fun to play. But it feels a bit dated in a sense. It feels like it was something that came out 5 or 6 years ago. Right. But I think personally, still really, really fucking fun.
Cool. I'll definitely look at that.
Yeah. And the physics are great, by the way, for it to be in an FPS. It actually all works really well.
Yeah.
And it definitely feels like it's very Portal-esque.
I'm going to say, if you're mimicking Portal, you need to have solid physics. That's a given.
Like you can shoot through portals and stuff like that, and you can go through enemy portals, and you can destroy enemy. Really, really cool.
Yeah.
Overall.
That's about it. There's just one more thing I've realised that we forgot to mention in the news. Because it's not really news, Ben was quite hyped in the chat to tell us. Ben was meant to be on today, by the way, so unfortunately he couldn't get on. So shout out to him if he's listening. But Ben was quite hyped in the chat the other night because he seemed to think that Jedi Fallen Order 2 had been announced. Yep. When I looked into it, what had actually happened was there was an investor's call thing that all these like to have, and EA said that they are more than happy to put more money into the future of developing the franchise, which is pretty much confirmation, but it's not like we've got a poster or a trailer or anything like that. It's not starting development, I don't think. Probably in the very early writing stages, I would imagine. So it's coming, but don't get hyped because it will be probably another 4 years. I don't know. Yeah, it'll be a while. But good to know that they're putting more money in, I guess. I mean, again, there's a review for Fallen Order on the website. I didn't like that game. But, it's cool. I mean, more Star Wars, sure. Why not?
More Star Wars, positive. Right? Hopefully. Well, as you said earlier on, bad average, not great.
But hey, we'll see.
We'll see what happens. Are we wanting to talk about our thoughts on Suicide Squad?
Yeah, no, I spoke about it last week. I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Okay, so, spoilers for those who are still listening and haven't seen Suicide
Squad. Oh yeah, I didn't spoil it last week, so we can do our spoiler cast.
Spoilers.
Good shout.
Spoilers.
Shit, we didn't talk about the Why Last Man trailer. When did that last?
It's fine. It's a comic book. It's an adaptation.
Go and watch. There was a trailer for Why Last Man that came out that we were going to do a live reaction to, but I've not seen it all the way through yet. But, do you know what? Go watch the trailer. Sorry, yeah, Mass. On you go.
It's fine. Don't worry about it. It's fine. We'll figure it out. No, Suicide Squad, spoiler review, I actually really enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was going to enjoy it, and I was very surprised by most of the film. From start to finish, I thought it was a blast, had a great time. I do get how you weren't super into the final third act. Like, I can agree that it was a bit jarring. However, because I put my suspension of disbelief, you know, on, I kind of really just enjoyed it, let myself kind of go into the wackiness and the funniest of it. It didn't cause me to walk out the theatre, like you mentioned some people did.
Yeah.
Or in your showing.
To be fair, the two that walked out of the theatre, the guy did not look like he was a superhero fan. He was wearing like a trackie and he was having his burnt. I did turn and walked out and he was eating his lip. I went, well, what a shite, my bottle, what a shite. Did you stay for the post-credits? Because I decided I didn't give a shit. Like, I knew there was a post-credits scene, I was like, I'm not staying for this.
Like,
it's just John Cena being still alive in hospital, right?
It's just, yeah. It was like...
I watched the, what you call it, Weasel waking up the beach. I watched to that point funny. And then I left.
Me and my missus were howling at that man.
Yeah.
Just, walking away. I was like, oh my God.
Something that bothered me a wee bit about this film, and this is probably just a very personal thing.
Yeah.
When the first Suicide Squad film came out, the main complaint was none of these characters feel vulnerable. Like, in the comic, it felt like anyone of them could go at any moment. Whereas in David Ayer's Suicide Squad, they killed Slipknot because they had to kill one of them, and then that was kind of that. In this one, James Gunn said, no, it won't be like that, nobody's safe, blah, blah, blah. But the only way that they really get round it is at the start.
Where they killed off.
They kill off the original, what you think is going to be Suicide Squad. And then it cuts to the other team, and then that's the actual team you follow through the film. And then, okay, they do kill off a fair few of them, but it's never through the collar. Like, they die because of other things, like, what's his name? Polka Dot Man gets crushed by Starro. Everybody else.
Stabbed in the heart by Peacemaker.
Yeah, like, everybody else dies in different ways. Like, I'd like to have seen more unpredictability of Amanda Waller killing people.
I don't think it would have worked, though.
That threat never felt real through the film.
I felt like it felt real when she was holding over the buttons.
Nah, you knew she was great.
I honestly fully expected her to.
I would have respected that if they had done that, but
fully expected them to hit at least one.
Yeah.
So I hit one and then get hit.
Yeah.
Like that thing that I mean, arguably probably would have worked better if like maybe like poke him up with his hand's head fucking exploded. But I, that intro scene was fucking great, by the way. I really liked that.
I liked the Weasel not being able to swim. That gave me a laugh.
That was funny. And the fact that it was Blackguard got up and got his face blown off was... That set the tone, though, for the rest
of the film. Yeah, but you knew it was going to... Like, as soon as he walked out, I was like, oh, he's betrayed him. And then they're just going to shoot him.
I wouldn't expect that it showed that much blood, though.
James, it's
rated a 15 in the UK.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe it is a bit...
overzealous in violence,
if you've watched Super or any of James Gunn films, it's typical for him.
I really like Bloodsport personally.
It's just playing Idris Elba. I like Idris Elba, Bloodsport.
I like the fact as well that he wasn't an exact carbon copy of someone like Deadshot.
Yeah, sure.
And I liked how like his powers come from his suit. Like his weapons and all that, and that was like a finite resource.
Yeah, his tech was cool.
It will run out at some point. Yeah, like it's not all like he can just pull, like in the comics he pulls his guns from another dimension and all that stuff. Like,
yeah,
it's metal. But and this he's very much like literally, I'm pulling it off to attach it to something else to make it bigger and all that stuff.
Yeah,
and I really like King Shark as well.
That was the other surprise for me. I went in not expecting to enjoy King Shark because CGI characters like Groot, they're never my favourite character. Whereas in this, I would probably say the shark and Ratcatcher's Rat were my favourite characters in the film.
Those are both
CGI characters.
I really like Ratcatcher as well, to be honest. I thought Ratcatcher 2 was quite.
I felt it sort of wasted Taika.
Yeah, I feel
just
like
having him as the dad was like
Ratcatcher was a weird one.
I thought he would have used to have it more, but
I thought so as well. But Rick Flagg, a lot better in this film.
Yeah, I didn't hate the last one. That I like what's his name, Joel Kinnaman. So
I think though this time as well, them killing off was quite an interesting move.
Mm.
And they make obviously the reference at the end of the film where that you think it's maybe him that's alive because his heart stopped. They make the thing about. Oh, his heart stopped, and we managed to get him and all that stuff.
Right.
No, it's just Peacemaker.
Right.
Which I actually kind of prefer because I feel like it would be too much of a cop out if they kept Rick Flagg alive.
I did think, to be fair, I did think when when Peacemaker got shot, I was like, oh well, this TV show must be a prequel.
Yeah, I thought as well.
But then, obviously, as the credits were coming up, don't worry, I waited till the house lights in the cinema went up before I put my phone on. Just in case, I hate when people fucking put their phones in the cinema in the dark. So I waited till the house lights were up, and then I went on my phone and I googled as I post-credit scene, and it said, yeah, and then I was like, right, what is that? Oh, it's just John Cena being alive, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to stay for that, catch you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I feel like Peter Capaldi was wasted, in my opinion.
You probably could have used him more. I like Peter Capaldi. Yeah.
I like Peter Capaldi. I feel he was wasted as the thinker. Harley Quinn, more psychotic and more close to her comic book counterpart in this one.
Really? I found her to be less overtly psychotic, but still not psychotic enough. She was quite sane up until the point she shot that.
I feel like that's how Harley Quinn is in some of the comics.
Yeah, she is unpredictable, but it happened and it wasn't like, oh, that I didn't expect that. It happened and I was like, oh, I forgot she was crazy because that's not how they've been playing her the whole film. Which, to me, is inconsistent. That's not...
Well, I think it kind of works, though, in my opinion. I feel like the fact the inconsistency of the psyche almost works because it plays at the character of her being psychotic.
I don't know.
Like, as you said, at the start, she's very much not like that.
Yeah.
And then as the film progresses, like, see the bit where she's doing the fighting and all that, and you see her brutally fucking kill a man with a gate?
Yeah.
Didn't expect that to happen. I was like, oh, one hit, two hit, three hit, four hit. I think he's already dead, but sure. Like that kind of thing. And the weirdly haunting, beautiful thing with inside the Starro eyeball.
Yeah, that was quite cool.
It was very cool. Very haunting in a way.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? The part that I was disappointed about in the trailer, there's a scene that she's walking down the corridor of the rich guy's house, and the flowers all fly out from behind her. And it looked in the trailer, it looked really kind of spectacular. The first time I seen it, and I was like, "Oh, I can't wait to see that full sequence in the film." See in the film that thing you see in the trailer, that's all that happens. It's not really that. I was expecting it to be really on the big screen, to be something really spectacular, like visually stunning, and it never really done it. I just showed you what was in the trailer.
That's fair, I get it. Yeah, I mean, it's understandable. Again, I actually like Starro, but that's because I'm a big fan of campy comic book stuff, and I felt like it worked, especially aligned with, oh my god, it's a fucking kaiju. Kind of enjoyed that. I thought it was quite fun.
It felt very quaint, very James Gunn. We make a reference to Godzilla, look how quirky we are.
What would you rate out of 10 then overall, Dan? I feel like...
To be fair, I think I'm liking it more the time goes by. I think when I seen it, I'd have said a 5. I think at this point, I'm maybe at a 6.
Pretty solid.
Putting it at maybe a 3 or 4. This is probably about a 6 in comparison.
I'd say it's like an 8. I really enjoyed it.
I'm in the minority. I know that a lot of people love this film. So,
but you know, it's good to have different opinions and stuff like that. And I can definitely see where you're coming from with a lot of it. Like, it's not unfounded criticism. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not you're hating it for the sake of hating it.
What I don't understand, like, I respect everybody's opinions different and all the rest of it, but what I don't understand is how come more people aren't really getting a bit fed up of... I feel like James Gunn's humour is so samey. I feel like he's doing the same stuff that he did in Guardians that he did before Guardians, with less swearing.
I feel like he's really tired at this point. I think if he does the same thing in the next Guardians film, I feel like it might get a bit tiring.
Yeah.
I feel like he could get away with it because it's a different franchise.
Do you know the point? I feel like he got tired seeing Guardians 2 when they're talking about, is it an apple that's not ripe yet? I was like, this joke's not funny. Like, dragging this out isn't making it funnier. And then when it got to the end of the joke, Nebulates it right, and then she's like, oh, it's still not right. I was like, this isn't funny. This is just annoying and slightly tiresome. And that's why I think going into Suicide Squad, I was kind of burnt out already. I was like, oh, here we go. So watching the trailer, I was like, oh, it's been more of the same. And then it was more of the same.
Not necessarily a bad thing. If you like
James Gunn, you will love Suicide Squad.
You'll like Suicide Squad.
Exactly. In the way that the Snyder Cut was probably the most Zack Snyder film ever, Suicide Squad is very James Gunn. So if that's your thing, then yeah, you'll love it.
I enjoyed Idris Elba chat with his daughter. That was kind of funny.
Again, I seen it coming though, because I was like, oh, well, the trope is always this is a heartfelt moment. Because he'd done it in the original Suicide Squad with Will Smith and his daughter. Yeah. So that was the trope, you know, like, oh, this hard man psychopath has a softer side kind of thing. And then I was like, oh, well, obviously this is a James Gunn movie, so he's not going to have a softer side, he's just going to shout at her and swear at her. And then that's exactly what they did, and I was like, oh, okay.
I still find it fun, though.
I don't know, it's so predictable at this point, I feel. It's lost its charm.
I do understand it can be. But I think, honestly, for me, a lot of times when I go see films, I put suspension of disbelief kind of up there, so I kind of... I like to always think I don't know what's going to happen, although it's very easy to predictable, because I like to live in the moment with the movie and stuff like that. It's a weird thing. It's a weird movie watching experience thing.
Everybody has their own exactly. thing you like, man. Just not a James Gunn guy.
Anyway, I think Suicide Squad, definitely worth the watch. Got the seal of approval. And actually, technically from you, Dan, it also has a seal of approval to go watch.
Because it's better than the haircut.
Yeah. And also because you basically give nothing a positive.
I didn't say I hated it.
Exactly, you did say you hated it, which means it's a positive review from Dan.
Nah, I wrote some positive reviews. I went to Quiet Place too.
One out of 10 doesn't count.
Listen, watchman hater, shut your face.
Okay, you know what, that's over with. Okay, fair. I think that's pretty much us done for this week. If you're still listening, if you're still watching, we really appreciate it. And if you wouldn't mind liking, subscribing, putting on that notification button for whenever we release a new podcast that usually come out every Tuesday or Wednesday, depending on how the upload schedule feels and how internet broadband and all that stuff works, because we live in a country where it's not always great, as case in point Ben cutting out right before the pod. But leave a like, subscribe. You can find the Big Glasgow Comic page on Facebook at Big Glasgow Comic Page, Comic Con, all that kind of stuff.
BigGlasgowComicPage.com.
That's it. We're also BGC. We're at BGCP on Instagram and also at BGCP on Twitter, I believe, as well. If you also just Google Big Glasgow Comic Page, you'll also probably find the website as well, where you can find the latest news, reviews, and occasional interviews that are available on the website. Several of them done by Dan, including his brand new Agander Gaming series of articles, which are pretty good and pretty solid and interesting take on the gaming industry, if you're into that sort of stuff. We also obviously do kind of comic reviews and also reviews on films as well. I've been your host for this episode of Massimo Castelli, and I've been joined by the lovely Daniel Boyd, and
hopefully we will have Big Papa Benjamin back next week.
Yeah, Big Papa Benjamin, or maybe Chrissy as well. We wish you guys a good week, and see you later.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to Disassembled. You can find more news and reviews on BigGlasgowComicPage.com. And don't forget, you can also find us on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube as BGCP Comic Con. Make sure you also subscribe on the podcast provider of choice for new episodes every week.